Welcome to the At Sea Podcast. I'm your host, Justin McRoberts. This episode is scheduled to air in February of 2020, which means that gyms all over the country will be wrapping up their New Year's deals, the deals that they use to entice new customers. It's a poorly kept secret in the fitness world that most gyms, 24 Hour Fitness, Planet Fitness, and the like, harvest the majority of their memberships in January, and then, come February or March, actually count on you not showing up at all, if at all. In other words, the expectation and intention of most of these campaigns has less to do with satisfying your actual physical need to live healthily, and more to do with capitalizing on that need, and then benefiting the financial health of the gym. CrossFit gyms are some of the few exceptions to that model. Started in Santa Cruz, California, which is about an hour south of where I live, CrossFit, as a philosophy, a culture, and eventually a network of gyms, has continued to upend and revolutionize not only the fitness world, but the business part of the fitness world, as well as the lives of many of its adherents. Now, of course, CrossFit has a lot of detractors as well, some because their gyms and coaches have gone off the rails, and some because some folks just flat out disagree with or don't like CrossFit's core philosophies. My guest on this episode of the podcast is Jeremy Jones. Jeremy is one of the early adopters of CrossFit, as well as one of its first gym owners and coaches. A lot of what I've personally learned about physical health and exercise, I've learned from Jeremy. More so even now, as he's developed what is called Thrivistry, which is a platform and a philosophy you'll learn about over the course of this conversation. Check it out. This all started in a backyard. Your coaching, programming stuff started in a backyard. Take me to the beginning.
Yeah, I started CrossFit in 2004. I was working as an engineer and teaching martial arts and competing in mixed martial arts. And I had just had my first, I found CrossFit online through a martial arts message board. And I was kind of like...
Were you here at the time? Were you in the Bay Area at the time?
Yes. Yeah. So I was living in... Walnut Creek at the time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is like an hour north of where CrossFit launched.
Santa Cruz. Yeah.
So it's just boom right there.
And so these guys started posting these things kind of like challenge, like try this at home. And they were posting these workouts on their blogs. And back then blogs were still pretty new.
Yeah.
And the founder, Greg Glassman, I guess, was friends with some of the guys that were pretty big in Silicon Valley before it was known as like Silicon Valley.
Right.
You know, like it is today. And they said, you should do a blog. So he posts a photo and sometimes an article from somewhere on the web and then just some article or some workout for you to try at home. So I was kind of stalking it for a little while, but I was training for my fight. And so I didn't try any workouts. And then it was July of 2004 where I tried my first workout and it just destroyed me.
Yeah, right. Which like the first CrossFit workout for anyone is like,
for anyone.
I don't know if I will live after this.
Yeah. Yes. And so at the time, I mean, I was in the best shape of my life. I just had, you know, my first MMA fight and I had won. And I was doing one of the things that we would do is the deck of cards, where you take a deck of cards and you flip a card over. And if it's red, you do push-ups.
Right.
Whatever that number that is. And if it's black, you do squats, just air squats.
Yes.
And so I had worked up to where I was doing two. And so that was like, I think over 400 push-ups and 400 squats. And it would take like 30 or 40 minutes.
Yeah.
But you just sit there and sometimes you get like three or four blacks in a row and you're like, oh, man. Right. And then you're dreading it because you know you're going to get a bunch of reds in a row too. Yeah. And you're like, oh. But
was that do you remember what the first workout was?
I do.
What was it?
So my first workout was Tabata squats, which is 20 seconds, as many reps as you can, 10 seconds rest for 8 rounds. So it takes 4 minutes. And then you do and then it was 4 minutes max muscle ups, which is a movement that's done on the rings where you're hanging below the rings and you pull yourself up and then press up above.
Yeah.
Which I couldn't do. So I just did dips in my kitchen on my kitchen counter with my feet on another counter.
Yes.
And then Tabata squats again. So it was 2 rounds of Tabata squats and then 4 minutes of dips again. So I was doing a lot of squats. So I actually did pretty good, but I did a few hundred squats in a 12-minute period.
Yes.
And I couldn't walk for like 4 days.
Right.
And I probably gave myself mild rhabdomyolysis, which is something that is associated with CrossFit, where if you do too many reps in too short a time, you can actually cause damage to your muscles and it can overwhelm your kidneys. Obviously no one even knew about it at that time. And so, I was like, what? And so, you know, coming from a martial arts background, you know, when you learn something new and you're like, ow, show me that again. Ow. Yeah. How do I do that? Ow. And so I think
you kind of follow the pain to like, what's causing
so
that?
When CrossFit crushed me, I was like, that was so hard and I'm so fit right now. And so then I was like, I got to learn more. And then, And as things went along, I realized, like, you know, I had, a couple black belts in martial arts, and I was like, you know, I kind of want a black belt in fitness. Like, I want to understand, you know, anatomy and fitness and training. I think that'll really help me be a better coach.
Right.
And so then I started pursuing the CrossFit thing. I think my second workout, which was like a week later because I was so sore, was Fran, which was also another famous CrossFit workout with something called thrusters and pull-ups. And it was so heavily modified.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, at the time, I was pretty fit when I started. I said I'd probably do over 10 strict pull-ups when I started, before I started CrossFit. But I was really light. And I remember this specifically because I had to make weight for my fight.
Right, right.
And so I was I think it was 198 when I started CrossFit. And then 3 months later, without deliberately changing anything, I was refereeing a fight. And so we were checking the scale for weigh-ins, and I stepped on it and said 212. And I was like, oh, this scale's way off.
But it wasn't.
No, it wasn't.
Actually developed that much.
Yeah, I put on like 14 pounds of muscle in 3 months just doing CrossFit.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I was eating a lot more too. But I wasn't paying attention to that stuff at that time.
But most people, it's probably different now, which we'll get to because the culture has changed. Mm-hmm. But especially those first few years, at least, almost everyone's like walking through the door across it. It was like that first workout, first four workouts, you're like, I don't know if I live. And when we'll get to talking about the shed in Walnut Creek at some point, but like, mm-hmm. it was like this, maybe the second time I was there, mm-hmm. The workout teams of two.
Yeah.
And one person's outside with a medicine ball, mm-hmm. like a 20 or 30 pound ball. And your partner's inside doing Tabata squats, push ups, and sit ups.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you chuck the ball. It was like toss and chase, throw the ball, mm-hmm. run, pick it up, the length of this like warehouse.
Yeah.
And then lunges all the way back. While your partner's inside.
Yeah.
And the idea, I think the workout initially was four rounds.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of round two,
yeah.
Craig, who was your partner in the gym, was like, we're only going to do three. Because everyone was like in pain and like, it was just, but like the learning curve, like it was, mm-hmm. you know, it was exciting, but we were learning. You didn't really know that mm-hmm. like, hey, this is actually... And it was both things. It was like, this is incredibly difficult. And because it's that hard, we kind of want to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Why is this so difficult?
Yeah.
Like it looks so easy on paper.
Yeah.
It looks so easy. Seems so simple. And those workouts, a lot of times in those early days, we weren't following like a program, you know, like a planned program.
Right.
It was just sort of like you'd make up the workout the day before, or like you may do a week at a time. And it was really just making sure that you were doing all the movements and kind of following this sort of intensity thing. So that was, you know, CrossFit, the biggest thing that it sort of, there was multiple points that made it totally different than anything else. And one of them was, you know, we're going to do things, you know, intensity is one of the keys, which is doing more reps as fast as you can while still moving safely with good form. But it was how can I, you know, we want to, you know, when you do it in this shorter time frame, it does something, you know, and when you do that over and over again, it just changes your body and it changes you mentally because you're pushing so much harder. Where the average gym training was, you know, you might do a few sets of this with rest in between, or, you know, do a little circuit of machines and you'd always rest. And when it got a little uncomfortable, you slowed down or stopped. And this is like, no, we want you to keep going and push yourself as hard as you can.
Yeah.
You know, so we didn't really have a plan of the programming back then. And so, you'd make stuff up and be like, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. You know, like,
right.
this is a train wreck. And you have to change it sometimes midday and then
mid workout.
Yeah. Or mid workout. Yeah. and so back then it was all just experimentation.
Yeah. Which is fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Which was kind of neat, you know, and the stuff that I learned through all those years of experimentation while I was learning more about training and the body and everything like that. And it really helped shift. Now what I do is I create workout programs for other gyms. And I have gyms all over the world doing it. Thousands of people do my workouts every single day.
Yeah.
For those, you know, because we were taking turns with the workouts. And then in 2005, 2006, I took over the programming full time. So I started creating seven, you know, each day was a different workout. So seven workouts a week. Every day uninterrupted since 2005, 2006.
Yeah.
So 13, 14 years now.
Which for you, like that's an interest and a passion. It wasn't just like, crap, someone's got to do this. In the same way that for you, like trying to figure out that first workout, like you get intrigued by a thing like that.
And yeah. It was like, why is this so hard? You know, yeah. As an engineer, you know, the I was very interested in the data. And the second thing that CrossFit brought to the table was the sort of a gamification of fitness. Yeah. And where there definitely was a competition aspect of it. So if you're in a class of 5 or 10 people, you don't want to get beat too badly, or you want to get first, especially if it's with a bunch of your buddies.
Yeah.
And so you go harder, which again brought that intensity to the table. But what the real point was, it wasn't for comparing to other people. It was so that you could record that result and then do that workout again in 3 or 6 months and see how much you've improved.
Yeah.
And so it was really always supposed to be about yourself going, being better than you were before. And so every workout had some sort of data point to record at the end.
Yeah.
So whether it was how fast you did it, or if it was a fixed amount of time, like 20 minutes, how many times could you do this in 20 minutes? And that was another real big point of the gamification aspect, was another big thing that CrossFit brought.
I'm not as big and strong and fast as this person, and then being bummed out about it versus like letting that kind of draw something out of you and competing with yourself is coaching.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yes. Like, so it's not just here's the number, here's the workout, try to beat that girl, mm-hmm. try to beat that guy.
Yeah.
There's this coaching aspect that also like culturally made CrossFit like a little bit different, which the two layers to that is like, it's great to have a coach that's with you mm-hmm. on the regular.
Yeah.
But also if you're one of those coaches, you kind of have to be like for the people who are in the gym at the time. So if you're a coach, you got people in your box and you're not really paying attention to people as people.
Yeah.
People are going to get hurt.
That's where CrossFit started. We grew really fast. And so then you started to see a lot more people just thinking that's all it was the workout. And so we don't call them coaches. We call them managers or class leaders. Like they just show up, turn on the lights, you know, okay, everybody warm up, and maybe they show a few movements. Okay, here's what we're doing today. And they demonstrate. They don't like teach people the movements. They just demonstrate them.
Yeah, watch me.
And then it's like 3, 2, 1, go. And they turn on the timer and turn up the music and then cheer at people and don't give them any feedback, you know, and that's not actually teaching or coaching. That's just leading the class, keeping them organized.
Yeah.
And that's where I think a lot of gyms, because there were so many gyms opening up, they would bring on people as coaches and you know, quote unquote coaches, and they weren't really teaching. So then people started to get hurt more often. And people also were, you know, if 15 minutes is good, 20 minutes is better. 20 minutes is good, 30 yeah. minutes is better. And so as people got more fit, they started making their workouts harder and longer and heavier. And that increased the risk factor, especially for newer people coming in.
Yeah.
Whereas
if you're like super intense, like star athlete person, like mm-hmm. maybe that works for you. But
yeah.
you start to narrow down the effectiveness of the culture.
Yes.
If you just make it about eliteness.
Exactly. And that's a real problem. And so again, then people also got caught up in the competition aspect, not just like the sport competition side, but just competing with other people in class.
Yeah.
And then we started seeing a lot of the negatives people talk about, like, oh, CrossFit's dangerous, or you're going to get hurt or whatever. And it's like, well, no, not if you're at a good gym and you have good coaches and you don't try to go too hard, you know, like, yes, if, you know, you can always hurt yourself in a good gym, but you know, when you have the culture there of like, no, this is a learning process, take your time.
Right.
You know, it's better that you go conservative today so you can come back tomorrow or the next day and keep going. You know, you're not winning any medals. You're not winning any money. There's no point in like sacrificing your spine just to win today, you know, and having that culture is really important for the long-term health of the gym and the person doing it.
So who was in your backyard that first round?
Yeah.
Like
it was backing up a little bit. Yeah. So I was doing it on my own, and I found there was a CrossFit message board, and there was another couple guys in Walnut Creek doing it. And so we started hanging out, and one was Craig Howard, and the other was Rob Barnum. And they we were like, let's start this. They just started this thing called the affiliate program, and it was like $500 a year. And I was like, what? Why would I pay for that? That's ridiculous. But we did it, and my partners talked me into it, and we're like, we're going to start this thing. And so we were doing workouts at my house, and I lived way down Treat Boulevard, so it was really hard to get to. But we just did my backyard, you know, 2 or 3 people, had a little blog, you know, and there's Diablo CrossFit. And then eventually we started trying to do park workouts. So 6 a.m. at Larkey Park, we were doing these workouts. Didn't have a permit or anything. We just showed up and worked out. Got sprinklers turned on us, came on us a couple times. You know, the grounds crew ran us, got upset with us because we drove a vehicle on so we could unload equipment. And they were like, who are you?
That's bad.
And then so then it was like, okay, well, we need to figure out a better solution. So then we got our little 1,000 square foot spot in kind of near Target, behind Tulio's restaurant. And so
and like kind of off downtown Walnut Creek.
Yeah, it's a little industrial area. And there was an office there, so one of my partners could kind of work out of the office, and then we could use the gym when we had classes. And then we just had a 6 a.m. and a 6 p.m. And then I was still working as an engineer until about 2008. And then I was really just not happy as working in the corporate world. And so I was like, I think I want to do this for a living. And my wife was like, are you nuts? Like, no, you can't quit. You know, and we had a house. So we had so we talked to her aunt, who's a really, really sharp financial advisor. And she said, yeah, do it. She's like, the experience you'll get and everything, and you can always go back. So yeah. She can help convince my wife to let me do it. And so my partner, Craig, he said, look, if the gym can't afford it, like I can pay you like, you know, $2,000 a month for like 3 months, and then we'll decide if we want to keep going. So thank you for that. I mean, that's what I had to live on, you know.
Yeah. And,
you know, it was a big pay cut. So we sold our house, so we didn't have all those payments. And I went for it in July. It was another July, July of 2008. And we didn't know what was going to happen. Well, within 2 or 3 months, we had doubled our membership.
Yeah.
And we actually started collecting money, which we weren't very good at in the beginning. First, it was just sort of pay as you go, donate when you can, yes. You know, kind of a thing. We had a biscotti jar, you know, those like foot tall jars with like this ragged hole cut in the top. Just like drop money in when you can.
Yeah.
So then we started doing auto pay and like becoming a business, and it grew. And then we quickly realized that we couldn't. That we outgrew the space, you know. Yeah. We couldn't fit that many people in there anymore, so we started looking for a new space. And then we found one in 2008. We found it, and then we built it out in basically December of 2008, and then had a big grand opening on January 1st, 2009. And that space was 4,000 square feet, and it was a big risk. It was going to be one of the largest CrossFits in the world. When we first affiliated in 2005, we were in the top first 100 or first 50, and now there's 15,000 around the world. You know? Yeah.
So the sort of the pacing of growth for you guys was, I mean, some of it was like CrossFit as an idea, like people were like, hey, I want to give this thing a shot.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people come through the door.
Yeah.
What, and one of the slights on gym culture broadly, mm-hmm. is that the model is you create a space, you get people in the door, they pay, and then they don't show up. And what you count on as a gym owner. Mm-hmm. Is that people aren't going to use your space and aren't going to work out.
Yeah, so the most extreme example of this is Planet Fitness.
Right? Yeah.
And so most Planet Fitness owners are using they buy into the franchise because they basically want to own the building, or they want the real estate, and they just have a small business. They have a business that generates a little bit of profit, and so they don't care about fitness at all. And their business model is to keep the membership so cheap that you never want to cancel.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of becomes the check in the box, you know, like I've got my job, I've got my house or a place to live, I've got my gym membership, and it's $15 a month or whatever. I get free pizzas every Monday,
right.
First Monday, and you know, all you can eat Tootsie Rolls. I'm not making this.
No, I know.
It's bagel Tuesdays and stuff. And so the membership pays for itself. But less than 15% of people actually use the gym on a weekly basis. And so they're expecting 85% of people to just have the membership and not go.
And that's not like an oops. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
I'm trying to make sure that people don't do this thing, which then it's not actually about health. You don't feel cared for.
No. We call those Globo gyms. So if you remember the movie Dodgeball.
I do.
Yeah. That was the little dude with the mustache, you know.
I do. So great.
And that was that gym, right? And these gyms are designed to look really fancy and have all these features and benefits to get you to sign up that day. And it's really high pressure sales, and they get you locked into a contract. They won't ever let you out because that's the model. And I remember when there was a Bally's, They both shut down while we had our gyms near them. Obviously, there was one actually right next to our original location, the shed. We call it the shed because it was an uninsulated metal building, by the way.
Yes.
The original 1,000-square-foot one. There was times where we were working out and we had, you know, big roll-up door, big garage door open, but it was so cold and we were generating so much sweat that it started dripping off. The yes. condensation started dripping off the roof into yeah. the gym on us, which was really...
It was a special place.
Yeah. And so it was that hardcore, and that's who we attracted, people that didn't care. Like, it was the hardcore. Yeah. But there was a Bally's there that shut down, and then we moved locations, and we were right next to another Bally's in Pleasant Hill, and then that one shut down. But I found out that the Bally's in Pleasant Hill, if everybody at the gym that had a gym membership, a contract, came once per week, you couldn't fit them in according to their fire codes and their operating hours. Wow. So that's just once per week for every person. So they had something like 8,000 contracts, you know, and you couldn't fit that many people in coming to the gym once a week.
The difference is, and I mean, part of, you know, the folks who come in the door, like CrossFit gyms will run deals to some degree, mm-hmm. but it's not, you're not going to be like, hey, you're paying $10 a month for the first half year. Like that's never going to be the case.
No.
And so look, I guess it's not a complaint, but one of the like, sort of the obstacles for folks is like, it's going to be $150, $200, $250 a month. Mm-hmm. But there's a degree of like, are you serious about this?
Yeah, skin in the game, right? If they're going to invest that much money, then you know, if you're going to invest that much money in something like that, you're going to use it.
Yeah.
Right? The difference is in most CrossFit gyms is if you stop coming, sometimes they'll just turn off your membership if you're not coming. Or if you want to cancel, a lot of them are month to month. So if you don't, you know, if you've gone a few weeks and you know you're not going to be able to come back, you can cancel.
Yeah.
I obviously, coming from that world, believe that you should keep your membership because that's going to make you come back. If it's a good gym and you're getting results and everything, then it's if you try to turn it off and on all the time, you're less likely to stick with it. You know, so there has to be, again, that's kind of skin in the game where, like, no, I need to go. And if you're investing that money, you're going to make more time and change yeah. your schedule and things like that to go. But it's funny because, you know, the big price difference is when you go to one of these Globo gyms, is you're just renting space, right? You're just going to go yeah. and renting the equipment, renting the space to use it. And but at a CrossFit gym, you're being taught by a coach. And it's just like martial arts or yoga. You're going to spend, you know, $100 to $200 a month. Usually on the CrossFit side, it's a little bit more expensive because it's more expensive to operate. You know, a yoga studio is just, you know, a floor and an instructor. And right. you can also fit easily 20, 30 people into a class, and it's doesn't, as long as it's large enough, it's not right. that big of a deal. Well, most CrossFit classes can't be more than 15 or 16 people just because of space. I mean, in order to do have enough space to do, you know, 15 or 20 people, you're going to need 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. Yeah. Where, you know, to do that with yoga, you only need like 1,000 square feet. Yeah. And plus all the equipment, you know, that you have to buy, and then all the upkeep of all that stuff. So it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but the reality is I did the math recently. If you spent $9 a day on lunch, just during the week, 5 days a week, that's like $180 a month. Yeah. You know, and you're like, oh, but I can't afford the gym. It's like, oh, but you're going out and buying lunch every day.
Yeah.
You know, like another one I did was if you did, you know, your bag of protein for $30, and you went out for drinks once a week for $40, and you got a couple lattes, it's like $250 a month. And it's like, yeah. you know, oh, I can't afford it. And it's like, well, yeah, you can, but maybe you're just not in the place right now where that's yeah. not important.
Well, that's what the number, the challenge... To some degree, I mean, it's culturally, it works the same way as the workouts themselves. There's something about like the intensity of the challenge that sort of calls this thing out of you. Like, are you actually going to do this? Are you actually really about your health? To say, you know, this is $200, then causes me to look around in my life and be like, okay, like if I'm needing to be in shape, if I'm wanting to be healthier, mm-hmm. there's probably an indication there, like I'm not where I want to be physically, yeah. spiritually, mm-hmm. emotionally. How much am I willing to actually sacrifice
yeah.
to make that happen? Mm-hmm. And I'm probably sitting on a bunch of stuff that I could probably get rid of and should, that might be dragging down my health to begin with.
Yeah. Exactly.
Anyways, mm-hmm. that notion or that sort of the angle, the more the sort of coaching, care, actually moving people towards wellness and like pushes you or kind of like it sort of was the engine behind Thrivestry, which mm-hmm. is like... Like you function under the name Thrivestry. You started Thrivestry like 2-3 years ago.
It's been three and a half years now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What is Thrivestry? Like if someone goes and finds you online.
Yeah.
What
so are you our up gyms, to there? We grew our largest gym. So that 4,000 square foot gym, we expanded to 16,000 square feet at one point. We opened a location in Alamo, and we had one in Martinez, and we had one in Benicia. And we remotely managed a fifth one in Pleasanton. And so we just were, again, one of the most successful CrossFit gyms. We had people competing in the world championships every year, you know, so I was coaching those athletes and I was really getting sucked into this competition aspect.
Yeah.
Because after a while, from 2004 to 2008, when I was doing CrossFit, there was no such thing as competition. It really didn't exist. It was
like
just,
when people could tune in and watch like
the sport,
sport on television.
Yeah, yeah. And so what they've done is they said, okay, well, instead of just like comparing one workout, let's do, you know, 3 or 4 workouts in one day and kind of rank everybody according to how they did, and we'll find the fittest person. And then they said, well, let's do it 3 or 4 days and let's find the fittest in the world. And so that's what they do now at the CrossFit Games that you see on TV. And so we were taking people to those events, and I was coaching that, and I was my creation of the workouts, the programming started, you know, I started to notice there was a big difference between the preparation for those people and the dedication required and what regular people need. And so then I started at created a division. So there's two different programs. And again, this is a big mistake a lot of gyms have made, is they started, again, programming for the competition side and then just sort of watering it down for the rest. They say program for the best and scale down for the rest, which is the worst idea ever. You know what I say?
why is that so bad?
Yeah, well, so, you know, I like use a cars, for example. Like if you need a truck, you don't go buy a 2-door sports car and then bring it to the shop and change the engine and the wheels and bolt on a truck bed and say, look, it's a truck. It's like, no, you need a truck.
Yeah.
Go buy a truck, or you need a commuter car, you know. And so trying to water down the competition programming for regular people is which is, by the way, is, you know, 95% of the people at the gym.
Yeah.
You should program for the 95% so they get the best results safely and quickly. And then you can scale up for the best or have them do their own separate program. And so that's what we do. That's what we started to do. But we had all these locations and it was really busy with the competition thing. And it really took away from that original reason why I got into it, was just to help regular people get fit, you know? And I reread that book, Start With Why, by Simon Sinek. He didn't have Find Your Why yet. I wish he did, because I read that book like 3 times before I could find my why. It's a really great book. It has a great concept.
It's a really good book.
It doesn't teach you how to find your why very effectively.
No.
And I realized that my why is I have to teach people how to thrive and how to have a better life. And so, and that's why I got into CrossFit, and why I was part of martial arts and everything, was I'm constantly trying to take in information and distill it down into the principles that I can then teach other people and to help them make their lives better, you know?
Yeah.
And so I really wanted to go back to our roots of just helping the regular people and not do the competition stuff as much. And so my partner and I decided to split at that time. And so we weren't sure who was going to take over the gym and who was going to leave. But I had already been creating these workouts, and they were good enough where people were asking me to use them and they wanted to buy them from me. And so we created a subscription program where these gym owners who didn't want to make it up for themselves, because, you know, to do a good job, it usually takes, you know, 3, 4, 5 hours a week of work to create these programs. So again, 20-30 hours a month, if they can buy it from someone else and it's better quality, like it's a no brainer. They can spend that time on other things.
Especially if you're a newer gym owner, you picked this up in the last like 2-3 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You haven't been around since 2003, 2005 to learn all this stuff.
And as an entrepreneur, there's a million things you could be working on.
Yeah.
Even just having your Sundays off, you know, and not having, because most of the time you end up on Sunday, like, I got to spend
doing all the work hours, for the rest of the
day. Yeah, on the computer. Yeah. And so they started buying it from me. So I said, well, hey, I'll turn this in, you know. And I realized too that, you know, with multiple gyms and a large community, I'm limited on how many people's lives I can affect and change. And so I realized that if I turn this into my main project and my main gig, I can affect thousands of more people. It's, you know, infinite how many more people's lives I can impact.
Yeah.
And so then I came up with the brand Thrivestry, which is a combination of the words thrive and mastery. So it's mastering the art of thriving at life.
Yeah.
And so then I took some of those subscribers I had, and then I, you know, got them on the new brand or whatever, and then that just grew and grew and grew.
So one of the other critiques of really any gym culture, but like CrossFit culture specifically, is sort of is contrasted with. It's not, I don't know if you call body positivity a movement, but the more the sort of awareness that not everyone is the same, like being healthy doesn't look the same for every person. Mm-hmm. And so whereas like, you know, gym ads in general will always be like, there's a body type, et cetera. So for someone who's kind of been emotionally, spiritually, socially informed by, you know, the notion of body positivity, and they're coming into a CrossFit world and they meet Jeremy Jones at the door. They're like, hey, so I don't want to feel like I have to look like her. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you have to say for someone who walks in? I have a certain body type. I don't want to feel like I've got to look like skinny chick in order to like.
Yeah. Yeah. Here. Well, or one of the things I tell people when they're looking for gyms is I say you want to, and this is the same thing for martial arts, is you want to see the full spectrum. If you see a bunch of, you know, really out of shape people, well, then maybe it's not that effective. Right, maybe the training that they're doing and the advice they're giving isn't helping create change. But if everybody's super fit, then maybe it's too hard, and they're not good at bringing in new people. So you want to see people who are, you know, not who are just starting their journey, and you want to see these specimens of humans, you know, and everything in between, because that says, okay, there's a journey here that I can follow. But when it comes to the body image issue thing, I think again, probably the third thing that CrossFit brought to the table was instead of trying to worry only about aesthetics. It was like, that'll come, you know. One of the phrases I came up with was looking good is a side effect of being healthy.
Yeah.
Right. And so what we know is if you can do push-ups correctly and you can do these movements, that's the way your body is supposed to operate. That's healthy. And if you do it long enough, eventually you'll start to look good. Right. And so instead of trying to chase the aesthetic part and not really paying attention, is this healthy for my body? You know, there's a lot of bodybuilding type movements that, you know, to develop muscles a certain way that aren't necessarily healthy for your joints, especially over, you know, years and years and years. And so it's saying, well, let's do the movements that the human animal has been doing for thousands of years, and we'll do them in this sort of intense way. And, if you know, we're going to chase that sort of, you know, functionality performance aspect. And then the looking good will come with it. So it's like, let's not worry about, how good you look right now. Let's just get you to where maybe you can do a pull up, you know, and on average, you know, even most women could do a pull up in 6 months to a year, you know, with training, that have never done one in their entire lives.
Yeah.
You know,
the movement towards health in general.
Yeah. Yeah. And functional. And that's actually one of the things I really teach with Thrivestry is that, it's really more about the whole point of training in the gym is to make your life outside of the gym better, not to revolve your life around the gym. And while there are some people that becomes their hobby and they love the sport and they love the community and they love all that stuff, that's great. But that's not going to help the most people or the people that need it the most, that need to just start moving and being taught, like, I don't know how to work out. Well, then come and we'll teach you. And, you know, and the whole idea is that we're going to use these movements in the most intelligent way possible to get you the results fast and safe so that you can then, you know, when something comes up like, oh, we're going to go on this hike or you know, we're going to go wakeboarding or we're going to go skiing, you know, you can do those adventures and still be able to participate. Now, you may not be the best of the best, but you can jump into any situation that comes up, or if it's an emergency or an injury, you know, because you have this large foundation, you're able to take advantage of that versus being left behind or in a worse position.
So not to become like a great gym person, but to literally become a whole person and like thrive in your whole life.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I actually, one of the things I include in my programming is each day has a context. It's either a practice context, a competition context, or a mental toughness context. And then I usually write like a few sentences about like what to talk about, what the lesson is today. And the general theme though is, and I got this from Kenny Kane out at CrossFit LA, and he really taught me how to implement this. He also has a martial arts background, and that's probably why it really resonated with me. But the idea is that in the beginning, when we both did CrossFit, every day was competition. Every day was go as hard as you can, get the best score you can. You know, it didn't matter if you sacrificed form a little bit, you know, it was just go hard. And you know, if you do that, you're going to get broken. That's just, you know, and I knew that myself from coming to martial arts. If you step on the mat and you go hard all the time, someone's going to get hurt. You know, so we were always told never to go. It was only on certain times that we actually go, you know, full speed or whatever. And so I was approaching my CrossFit like that myself, but I wasn't really conveying that very well to everybody else. And so then I started programming that into the day. This is a practice day. Yeah, you're going to be tired and sweaty. You may even lay on the floor afterward, you know, when you're done. But during within the class itself, you're constantly pacing yourself so that you're still moving correctly. If it's a little too heavy, maybe you drop the weight or change the movement. And so there's always this eye on technique and form and not just go hard. And then now the competition days, which show up about 30% of the time, those are days where you want to push yourself a little harder. Those are the days that you really want to record your result, because I do repeat specifically on those competitions so that people can get those data points and see. You know, one of the things we know about motivation and happiness and things is it's very demotivating if you're constantly comparing yourself to others or trying or seeing how far you have to go. So I have this goal of doing this workout in this time or performing this movement, and constantly being reminded how far away that goal is is very demotivating. But when you show people how far they've come, that's much more motivating. So when they start logging early on and they here's a movement, like I couldn't do a push-up even on my knees when I started. And then over the period of the next year, now I can do 5 push-ups on my toes. That's far more motivating than saying like, well, I'm still so far from being able to do 20. You know, so having people log on those competition days is really important. And then the mental toughness is really about, you know, sometimes it's an ego check. Like, all right, you know, today you're going to go really light, because if you can't do this movement perfectly, then you need to go light. Yeah. Some days it's a really long workout and you just have to, it looks so, you know, it's going to hurt and you do it anyway. And you know, you're going to suffer, and that's a mental toughness too. So it's kind of, that one's more about testing your limits.
The approach, the broad approach, to the whole person thing, which again, making it more of a culture and the communal aspect, like actually rearranges the way people approach working out. Because, and you and I both know this, like this, the divisions we put between the, you know, the facets of our lives, where it's like, I've got my social space over here, and then I have my like religious space over here, and then I have my financial stuff like way back here in a dark corner and never talk about. And then over here, for a lot of folks, it's like, I've got this physical stuff, and like, you know, my body, and I don't feel good, etc. And but that's not really how a soul works. Like, you're a whole person, and like, if you're not physically okay, like, That's gonna weave its way into everything.
Yes.
Like, just like if my relationships are jammed up, like that's gonna weave its way into everything. Like the approach, like to the whole person, which is why I really love the notion of thriving.
Yeah.
As opposed to getting in shape.
Yeah.
Like, fit. Don't just get fit. Like, be whole and thrive as a whole person.
Well, and what we found was you know, again, I've had people doing my workouts now for over 10 years. Uninterrupted. In fact, this month is my 15th year of doing CrossFit. I'm actually writing an article. I did CrossFit for 15 years, and this is what it did to my body. I'm one of the few people that is still at it after this long.
Yeah.
But what we found was when people were really focusing on the getting fit and the CrossFit part of it in the gym, is eventually they get bored and they get burned out. Because, like, why am I doing this for? You know, like, what's the point? And so, you know, it's this constant, you have to bring that into your culture where you are trying to teach them to be a more complete human. You know, one of the other things that I do is I provide these circle questions in every class where coaches can pick and choose which one they want to use. And sometimes they're just silly questions. You know, if you were a breakfast cereal, what kind of cereal would you be? You know, like, or you know, if you could have a superpower, like read minds, fly, be invisible, or have super strength, which one would you pick? You know, and or sometimes it's more deep, you know, like especially on a mental toughness day, it might be a time where you say, you know, talk about a time where you really needed to ask for help and you didn't, and what happened, you know, and some of those questions are deliberately to show vulnerability. You know, I really like Daniel Coyle's book, The Culture Code, which he talks about how you build a strong culture and connection between people is shared vulnerability. And so what the kind of the loop is one person shares a little bit of vulnerability, the other people respond by, you know, sharing their own vulnerability, and it creates this virtuous cycle. And so asking sometimes questions that are a little uncomfortable, you know, and people don't want to answer, but then they do, it really helps build those bonds.
Yeah.
And then it goes beyond just the fitness part. And some of my more recent articles I've written for subscribers is about identity and principles and kind of everything else. And kind of what I say is, you know, your identity is kind of like the car you drive. You know, it's it doesn't change very often. It does change occasionally, but it sort of represents a more permanent fixture of kind of what you believe. You know, what's important to you, price and like color and like style and that sort of thing. And then kind of how you drive and maybe the stickers you put on it are more like your principles, these things that you sort of you do without thought because you've pre-decided.
Yeah.
You know, these are things that I've decided to do. It just makes life easier. So you're not constantly having to make decisions about everything because there's decision fatigue, right? And the more we can act within our core identity, because we just do it without thought, you know, but sometimes people have things as part of their identity that really holds them back.
Yes.
And so, you know, what I talk about in the article is saying things like someone saying like, I can't go to the gym because I always get hurt, or I can't lose weight because I have a sweet tooth. Like they believe that about themselves. And it's like, well, is that really true? Maybe we can tweak that, or we can use a tool like just removing the temptation completely, you know, because we know that, you know, if you know that about yourself, well, then just get rid of all those bad things or set up your life to avoid them.
Yeah.
Another way is I call it tacking. Like when you're in a sailboat, you can't sail directly to your destination if there's a headwind. If the wind is blowing straight at you, you go to the side and you tack. And so you can kind of go diagonally and you zigzag.
Yeah,
and
because sometimes the fastest route somewhere is not the straight line.
Yeah, so it's not the straight line. So you if you can find something to help you tack where you're still making some progress toward your destination, but it's not as hard as trying to go push directly against your identity.
Yes.
So I talk about that in that article as well.
Ah, that's really good.
And so what I was going to mention around community was the identity thing is so important. You know, a lot of the gym owners, what we talk about is, oh, have a strong community, but you can't sell that to people who don't go to the gym. So anybody listening who hasn't been to a CrossFit gym, you don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that the people at the gym, they've accepted that this community of this gym is part of their identity. And if it's part of who they are, then it's much easier to be consistent through the highs and lows, and it brings you joy. It's like, you know, cheers, everybody knows your name, and you look forward to seeing your friends. You know, you may not look forward to working out, you may not look forward to how it feels afterward, but at least you get to hang out with people and you have fun and everything. And so when you tie that to your identity, it becomes much easier to be consistent and stay for a long time. And so that's really where the identity and the community piece kind of works for the person coming to the gym as well as the gym itself.
And if you tie it to who you are as opposed to just this thing you do, whether there's the gym you go to, then those things you practice, those new patterns, those sort of like literally creating like new pathways in your brain can make their way into the other facets of your life.
Exactly.
That if I can fight through this and these people are going to cheer me on, then that's actually like I have more of I've got a better shot at actually doing that. Where like I need to make that decision, like I've got to drop this full-time job because I have this dream I want to chase, and it's gonna be hard as hell. But I know what it feels like to push through hard as hell to get there, or relationally to push through, or to like to cut back or to pace yourself. If you can learn it in one facet of your life, then like you can do that in the other facets of your life. But you've got to actually see yourself as a whole person.
Doing all that. Yeah. What I like to say, and this comes from Seth Godin, is people like us do this.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, when you're one of the things about going to the gym is if you don't change your diet a little bit, if you don't change your other habits too, then you're not going to see the same results everybody else. You know.
Yeah.
But so when you're having to make those decisions and you've adopted it as part of your identity, you know, people like me try to eat healthier. Yeah, nobody's perfect, and that's different for everybody. But at least you're making an effort because you and that community are trying to do it. And then, you know, people like me go on fun adventures and try new things.
Yeah.
You know, and people like me go to try to get sleep. You know, and when that's part of the community and everyone's doing it, you're way more likely to do it and have success.
So it's not like people like those gym people do that.
Yeah,
it's like no, people like me.
Yeah,
exactly. I'm one of those folks.
Me and my friends, and we're all going to do this challenge this month where we're going to try to eat clean and do the whole 30, or you know, they have all these different things you can do, or we're like we're all going to try to be consistent this month and try to come to the gym 4 times per week or whatever.
Yeah,
you know, and you do that together as a group and a community, and then you get those benefits. It makes it much easier, like I said, if you're doing it as a group as part of your identity than if you're just by yourself, because everybody has a million things that they like to start or do or change.
Yes.
But then they just put it off, you know,
because it's not them.
Yeah.
It's not them. It's not their life. It's not their culture, not their friends.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good.
Yeah. And there's also this piece too that you come, when you're going to these gyms, these CrossFit gyms, and you have these smaller classes and you have coaches that know you, there's a lot more accountability there. And that's really where the right now you can go online and find a good program to do that, mm-hmm. you can do in your garage or you can do on your own or an app or whatever, and it's free. But why aren't people more fit? Why aren't they doing it? And it's because there isn't that accountability there, where, you know, if you miss a couple of days, nobody's going to notice, you know, like. But when you have coaches that care and that are checking up on you and making sure you're coming, and, oh, you're going out of town, well, here, let me give you a workout you can do while you're gone. Mm-hmm. You know, that really makes a big difference, is that accountability piece.
Yeah. Man, thanks for your time.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Sure.
Good.
Hey, I'll be back.
And thank you for listening to this episode of the Otsy Podcast. If you'd like to follow up with Jeremy and what he's doing with Thrivestry, again, the name is Thrivestry, Thrivestry, Thrive Mastery, Thrivestry. The website is thrivestry.com. You can also find him active at Facebook and Instagram. You can find me by searching my name, Justin McRoberts. And if you'd like to be a patron, if you'd like to come along and support the work of this podcast, go to patreon.com and search my name, Justin McRoberts, or just look for the @C podcast. We'd love to have you on the team. Until next time.